Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Castorbis podcast with a K. And we're back in audio this week, so welcome to the house band. And here is Brian Turnover and James McLean.
Hello.
Hey, we're here.
Hey, over here. How are you guys? Here. All right.
Great.
Yeah, excellent. James?
Ah, not bad. It's my second podcast today. Believe it or not, I'm sure you won't realise that. I've just finished one with. Yes, really. Really. It's nothing like having to re-record a bit, is there?
Nothing like it at all. No.
Nothing like it at all. No, just did one for the Pickled Brains podcast.
Okay, and what's that about?
He's a gentleman called Brad Slatton, and he does interviews with various people on various different topics, but the topics we were doing was horror, and I was talking about things in childhood which propel you towards horror. And I, of course, use Doctor Who as one of those potential things. Given
did you mention the podcast with a K?
I didn't, no. I didn't. Well, I kind of thought I could. But I don't know. You see, I'm more than this podcast, Christian. There's more to me than just this. If I was just to mention the podcast with a K, I'd just be sending out a message that my life is just revolves around the podcast with a K. I don't think that would. No, it's not okay. It's podcast rhythm. Okay, I guess. No, it's not okay. So I couldn't. I've got to seem deeper. I've got to seem a deeper person than I'm actually coming across here.
Right, I see. Well, interestingly enough, I was invited onto the Make Use of Technophilia podcast during the week, which is a big Google Hangouts thing, a little how we did the Castorbis Live podcast last week, and how we might do some more in the future. And I mentioned Castorbis a couple of times. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Good.
Okay. So anyway, last week Brian wasn't with us, which to all of our chagrin. I'm not sure if I've used that in quite the correct tense, but anyhow, and a little bit disappointed to not be able to get Brian's reaction at the time of the announcement of Peter Capaldi as the 12th Doctor. And if I can just say that again, Peter Capaldi is the 12th Doctor. There we go. And still excited. And so we thought, obviously, we're going to talk about that with Brian this week. And just thanks to everyone who watched us live last week and who have watched us on YouTube since and have listened the normal way. That's by far and away the most successful podcast we've ever done. Something like 2,000 plus views/listens of that podcast. So I'll just say that again. That's 2,000 plus listens and views of last week's podcast in which we live commentated on Peter Capaldi's unveiling as the 12th Doctor Who. Wow! Thank you, everyone. Thank you, listener.
Yeah.
Thank you, listener.
But only
it was a long time for that listener to be sitting there listening to you two talk about Peter Capaldi.
Did you, Ryan? Ryan?
Did I listen to you guys?
Yeah.
No, honestly, No.
It wasn't him.
Oh,
no.
Relax, it wasn't me. I didn't do that. I had other things to do with my time.
So did everyone else, but we could have had 2001 listeners, and how cool would that be, given...
Could have had. I was in the middle of, sort of kind of Nowheresville, Colorado, and, it was not, it was a nice trip, because, you know, I'd never been there before, but it was not a trip for good reasons, I will say that, so... without going into any personal kind of stuff. So I didn't really have access to Wi-Fi where we were. I didn't really have the ability to do much on... it was kind of like almost a vacation, in a sense, from technology, in a way. However, Colorado is nice. The mountains are nice to go visit. They're great to look at and view. And the weather was gorgeous. So it was really nice in all those respects. And the first thing coming home to Philadelphia, when you feel the humidity and the heat here, it made me want to be back there. But once I got back here to all my technology and the regular just the regular flow of life, it was a much better thing, I think, all around. I miss the weather, I miss the mountain view, but I'll stay with that, I guess. So I'm sorry I missed you guys. I didn't mean to miss you guys, but I legitimately could not listen.
Yeah, it's okay. We absolutely understand. Well, yeah, we're talking about Peter Capaldi. I'm still excited. James, you still excited?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
Oh.
Brian, how excited are you?
You know, I am pretty excited for this, to be honest. When he first walked out on stage, I know that we had all had, you know, he was the front runner with the bookies and so on, so his name was already kind of out there, but there was a little bit for me, a little bit of a surprise, like, wow, it actually was him kind of moment. You know, I didn't actually have that feeling beforehand that, oh, it's definitely him since he's the one the bookies are saying, you know. For some reason I still had in the back of my mind the whole Matt Smith thing where he came out of left field.
Yeah.
But I will say for me, before Matt Smith was cast, I had kind of made a checklist of things that I had wanted for a doctor. And Peter Capaldi really is all of those things, minus one.
Scottish? You wanted a Scottish doctor?
Those sorts of things aren't generally on my list. But no, the one thing that was on my list is just a silly little thing that I would like to see done, and we obviously can't know if that's happening until it actually happens on screen. But what I wanted was an older doctor.
Yeah.
Like somebody Eccleston or a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted somebody who seemed like they had an air of authority about them. Someone mm-hmm. who could maybe walk in the room and kind of command people's respect, but also still get himself in trouble when people don't believe the nonsense that it sounds like he's spouting, you know?
Yeah.
But I kind of wanted a little bit of a return to that. I liked the kind of older appearance. And still someone who seems like they can still be a bit silly and enjoy themselves. And when he walked out on stage, obviously he fit the bill physically. When he started talking, he seemed like he fit all the rest because he seemed like he was very much in control of himself, but he also seemed like he was not afraid to show the silliness of him or how much he enjoyed the things that we enjoy. And I like that, and I just want to see how well that's going to translate to film. It'll be nice, I think. I mean, I'm very excited for it. I have not been this excited about Doctor Who for a little while. I just hope it lives up to that.
Okay. Just got to tell you that I've just told the world that we're podcasting this week's podcast, and then Nicola Bryant popped up telling the world that Colin Baker is on Mr. and Mrs. tonight on ITV. So, dear listener, absolutely nothing to do with Peter Capaldi. If you're a fan of the lovely Colin Baker, you should be able to catch him on the ITV player if you're in the UK.
Why don't you send him a Twitter, say how you don't like watching that show as well?
I dare not. Well, I wonder, and both of you may have your own thoughts on this, I wonder if the casting of Peter Capaldi is answering a few critics. One, particularly the criticism that Stephen Moffat's had over the way in which Sherlock has possibly taken precedence over Doctor Who. Do you think we're possibly going to get a more steely, as a word we used to describe the Eighth Doctor a couple of weeks ago, more sort of devastatingly clever Sherlock-style Doctor with Capaldi? Do you think that's a possibility?
Hmm. I think it depends really. It depends really on what sort of script they give him. If they get him a script where he's intelligent and does lots of intelligent things, he'll probably be an intelligent sort of doctor. However, I am guessing, and it's just a guess, if they give him a script where he's a bit zany and not very bright, perhaps a bit like a Peter Davison doctor, he won't be a particularly bright doctor. So I think this is why I'm a bit blasé about this sort of aspect of the Doctor at this moment, is that he's a good actor, he's a great actor, as we said last week. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he'll do. But I think I'm sort of spent on speculating to a certain degree.
Okay.
As if now I'm at a point where I'm thinking, right, he'll do whatever he's going to do, whatever they want him to do. Fingers crossed it's going to be something which is different. And I think it will. I think that's the only thing I will speculate on, is I think you can see from just the choice of Doctor that they're going for a very different approach to the show.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is going to feel like the transition between Tennant and Moffat, which, regardless of what you think of Moffat's writing or anything else, the show didn't really change dramatically between the two. I don't think it did anyway. You know, people thought it was going to go into a classic era where there would be no more of this silly emotion stuff for Russell T. Davis, and it'd all be science and proper science fiction, whatever part of Doctor Who ever did proper science fiction, I don't know, but apparently it did. And it wasn't. It was the same sort of structure, same sort of arc, same sort of explosive ending, same sort of melodramas. And I think this might be a change. I think this might be a change into a different direction. It feels they're moving somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about that, Brian? Would you agree?
I definitely think it's going to be a difference. I mean, everything that Moffat has done, basically, every time he's tried to change something, he tried to do it a bit heavy-handed. And not saying that is a bad thing, but I mean, like, there were a lot of changes, especially when the Pawns left. He dramatically changed the sets and tried to really change the character of the Doctor. And I think for the better, in Matt Smith's case, when the Pawns left, he changed a lot for the better. So I do think there's going to be a definite difference in storytelling, just because it's a new way to drive it. I think I'm wondering kind of if the BBC is thinking what I'm thinking, where it's time for a definite change, just a little shift, not like a full on complete restructuring of the show. I don't think that's necessary, but just a different feel or a different tone to the show. And hopefully that's what, you know, they'll bring with him, and hopefully the writing won't let him down with that. But, you know, like I said, the more serious commanding tone, I don't want the sillies to go away, but I don't want them to be the forefront of the character. It seems a little too silly at times. But, you know, and like James was saying, it's very hard to kind of speculate what's going on, just because it's very easy for Moffat or any writer who has ever written for the show just says that you just write the Doctor, you don't write toward an actor. And I don't know if I believe that 100% fully, but if they're just going to write to the Doctor, he may have to write, he may have to play with what he already has in existence, you know? But I don't know, I'm anxious to see it. I'm hoping that there is a fun change. It's still Moffat. Who knows if he finished the storyline that he had in mind and is now coming up with a brand new storyline since there's a new Doctor, or if he still has a direction that he was planning on going. If he's got a new one, then hopefully that means new changes. If he was planning the old one, then we're probably in for some of the same, I would say, just with a new guy and a new personality.
Okay. Well, here's the new guy, and we'll be talking a bit more about him as the months progress, because we're probably not going to see him for about a year after the Christmas episode anyway. So we can talk about him at length before Christmas and in about 12 months time. What I would like to talk about, though, is some of the guys that didn't get the nod. Now, of course, on Sunday we were excited by the possibility that it might be Sam Troughton. This is on Sunday morning, early Sunday afternoon. He's obviously the grandson of second Dr. Patrick Troughton. Then earlier in the week there was so many names: Daniel Rigby, Ben Daniels, Ben Whishaw, Rory Kinnear, any number of people with hair and male hormones, and indeed many females were suggested and touted as possible. Well, to be honest with you, I never thought any of the female ones were really going to be likely. I don't think that is something that, and you may well disagree with me, but I've been proven right on this occasion and on one before that. So, there you go. We'll put that aside. There were lots of names mentioned, and there's always lots of names mentioned. You know, going all the way back to 1996, Anthony Head was apparently mentioned this time around, and he was back, he auditioned when Paul McGann auditioned. And there's this big kind of alternate reality of Doctors that didn't become the Doctor. Obviously, there's the, which we mentioned on Casterbridge this week, there's the Patterson Joseph, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Idris Elba thing as well, where, or Colin Salmon or Richard Ayoade or any number of excellent black actors who may have been cast but ultimately weren't. Now, I'm not talking about this so we can discuss the issue of racism or lack of racism or, you know, the multiculturalism
lack of racism
within Doctor Who. Well, it depends on how you actually define racism and whether you think racism is a good thing or a bad thing, or whether we all have our own sort of like cultural identities and there is innate racism in everyone that isn't necessarily equated to hate. It's just that we are different races and we all agree that or not.
Yeah, but
that
would be less funny.
Yes, it would. However, what I'm getting at is, have any of those names that have been thrown up over the years as Doctor ever stood out to you and thought, oh, I'm really disappointed we didn't get that Doctor?
Wow, I'm unfortunately only coming up with people that have been mentioned since, I guess, since Tennant left, because that's the only people that I can kind of remember right now. I'm trying to throw back to further than that, but I don't know. I think, honestly, for me, every time I was watching the bookies things, all the news reports on all the bookies names that were out there, or just the rumored names that were out there, it wasn't until, honestly, when Capaldi's name had showed up that I actually was like, you know, I could see that one. Mm-hmm. Everybody else, I was kind of like, no, and kind of, you know, I'd like to see an unknown again, somebody that I don't have any preconceived notion of, you know, somebody that I don't. And it's not to say that any of those names that I said no to would have been bad in the role. They might have been great in the role. It's just that based on the work that I had seen them in, I didn't have a sense that they were right for the role.
Yeah.
If, for me, for what, you know, going on their past work. But I'd have to stretch my, you know, my memory back a little bit further to try and bring up any of the ones that were brought about before Eccleston or Tennant or even during the days of the classic series. But for any of the ones since Smith and up, you know, I don't remember any standout ones that I felt, you know, we missed the boat on.
Well, what about going further into the past? Maybe it's possibly not an easy question for Brian, not being British and not having the kind of cultural references that we've got. But say Bernard Cribbins.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the Tom Baker, he was on the list alongside Tom Baker. Obviously, the one with Tom Baker.
That was a mistake, wasn't it?
Well, no, it wasn't. And I'm not saying did they cast the wrong person. I'm saying would it have been good if that person had been the Doctor at some point, or could you have seen that person as the Doctor? Would you see Bernard Cribbins as the Doctor?
It depends on how, doesn't it? Because I mean, it sounds like I'm being pedantic, and in a way I am, in a way I'm not. But the way that Tom Baker played the Doctor very much opened the boundaries to what we consider the Doctor is like now. So in a sort of inverse way, if you had Bernard Cribbins at that time, you'd have had it'd been a different kettle of fish to assess him as the possibilities of him as a Doctor, because he might have taken it in a very different direction to where Baker consolidated the role, if you see what I mean. That's where it becomes interesting, I guess.
Brian?
Yeah, I was just going to say, kind of like what I was saying based on other people's past work, you know, I loved Bernard Cribbins, and I saw him in the second Dalek movie.
Yeah.
And I loved his character. I thought he was hilarious. I thought he, like, helped make that film for me. You know, I enjoy that one much more than the first one just because it does have a nicer pace to it, but also because he brought a lot of, like, levity to it, which I thought was great. So when I heard that he was going to be in the new series of Doctor Who when he had gotten properly cast. Well, I loved his cameo. When I heard he was a cameo, I thought that was fantastic. But when I heard that he was properly cast, I just thought, wow, that's awesome. I love this guy. But I can't say at any point, based on the work, again, that I've seen by him, that I could see him as the Doctor. I picture him more so as somebody who may have traveled with him or may have known him, but I don't think I can picture him in the role. And it's weird because he's such a great, entertaining guy.
Yeah. Well, another one is Fulton MacKay.
That I don't know.
Who was apparently on this for the third or fourth Doctor, I can't remember which, I think it was third, well, I may be wrong. And he was in the Silurians as the, oh, good God, what's his name, Doctor something. It's on the tip of my tongue as well. He's the guy who's in league with the Silurians. And, of course, in later years, he was also in Porridge, the famous British sitcom, and...
Fraggle Rock,
yes.
Can't forget him in Fraggle Rock.
No, down in Fraggle Rock, yeah, with the doozers and the big people So, what do you think of Fulton MacKay? Do you think could he have been a Doctor? Do you think?
It's hard, isn't it? Because we don't really have that many who fit in that older age gap. I know it sounds crazy to say that, but. Once you get past Hartnell, we do generally, apart from maybe Pertwee because he's got whiter hair, the Doctors are pretty young.
Yeah.
Even Patrick Troughton carries a very youthful Doctor off.
Yeah.
And they all do, really, ever since from that point onwards, really. So it's kind of hard when you get people like Fulton MacKay, who I know wouldn't have been quite as old as we think of him now. I mean, I think of him as in Porridge. So I'm probably thinking a little too far ahead in time period. Well, no, probably not that many years ahead, actually.
Was it Porridge, I think, or something?
78, I thought it was earlier than that.
It might have been earlier than that,
I think it was earlier.
I think 78 was when it finished and they did this
movie. Yeah. So, you know, no, so it was, yeah, because what's his name died in 75, I think. So everything was a lot earlier. But anyway, so yeah, it's kind of hard to imagine older actors in the role, funnily. And this is quite unusual, as I say. I mean, this is as old as Hartnell was, and... It's, you know, you think of the Doctor as an old man, but you think, no, actually, he's not been an old man for, like, almost 50 years.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of hard one to sort of decide what other people would be like in that sort of age group. Again, as I say, I can't work out how old Fulton would have been at the time of when he'd have been cast, so that might be a bit unfair. But
what is interesting, we may have mentioned this last week, although I don't think we did, is the fact that Peter Capaldi's 55, and William Hartnell was 55,
mm-hmm.
and it's the 50th anniversary year.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's just a nice bit of synchronicity there. Now, another older man who was on the list back in 1996, as we mentioned, and was apparently he was a favourite with the bookies this time around, and he often comes up in these discussions in the press as a potential doctor. And I've never really thought, I've always thought he was a bit obvious. But now that he's 59, and I'm talking about Anthony Head, now that he's 59. Which is what he is apparently at the moment. He's 59. My opinion of it has changed. I thought he would have been a brilliant suggestion. If we hadn't have had Peter Capaldi, I would have been more than happy with Anthony Head on this occasion.
Yeah, I've always had quite a lot of respect for Anthony Head, and I think he would have been good. I know a lot of people wouldn't, but
Brian, what do you think?
I was going to say I'm curious as to how you guys know him in the UK.
He's British.
Well, no. Pretty I mean, what was the base work that you knew?
I would say Buffy is his base work in Britain as
really?
Well.
Really?
Still in Britain?
No.
Not the Nescafe ads.
It was Gold Blend.
Gold
Blend, in which he had this kind of will-they-won't-they relationship with Sharon Maugham, who, was, of course, is Mrs. Trevor Eve, who famously doesn't like Doctor Who.
But you would say that would be... I mean, I'm quite serious now. You'd say, would you feel that is what he's...
I think that through a lot of press exposure at the time, because it did successfully build up a lot of interest,
it did.
I think that is what he was primarily known for before Buffy.
Yes.
And I think in the minds of people of a certain age who have no interest in Buffy, no, Buffy was on BBC Two. It only fetched like 5 million viewers a week, so it wasn't like a widely. That was like finales, at the most, with replays. Repeats. So, you know, although it's a well-known cult show and it's hugely influential, it wasn't widely watched.
Yeah, well, I suppose I could see that argument, but I would still say that if you were to say to people who Anthony Head is, for the majority of people who would know the name would be linked to Buffy.
Perhaps, even if they haven't seen Buffy.
Possibly, but I would say, I'd agree with you probably that if you said Anthony Head, majority of people would know the name from Buffy, so they would have seen Buffy. I think more people know him for Buffy than know him for being Anthony Head, I think is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Even though I agree with you, yes, the cafe was a big thing at the time.
So it is Buffy for you guys, though, which is interesting, because I really didn't expect that, to be honest. I was going to say the American exposure to him was essentially, if I'm not mistaken, it was Maxwell House coffee commercials,
yeah.
And then Buffy. And for me... I didn't like Buffy. I was not a fan of that series whatsoever. And I didn't enjoy him in the series whatsoever.
I thought he was a bit, for me, he was a cliched professor.
Yes. And he was, when you watch British TV shows as an American, and then you watch British actors or people pretending to be British in American film, you start to get to notice a difference that I'm sure you guys are already completely aware of when you check it out. It's like when we see an American in a British film.
Mm-hmm.
And he seemed to me like they were having him play the American stereotype of a British person when he was already really a British person and could have maybe done something else with it, but he seemed like he stuck to playing the American stereotype.
Yeah.
Now, that said, having seen that, I would have said no to him in a heartbeat for the Doctor. But I watched the series Spooks, and he did an episode, I believe it was Series 1, maybe it was Series 2, I don't recall. But he was phenomenal. He was so damn good in that episode. It turned me around with him as an actor, and I just became very interested in him. He had this subtlety to him that was just beautiful, and I could easily see him playing the Doctor just based on that one performance in that one TV show. Especially the other thing with him too is I think at the age that he is now, or when he was in Spooks, it lends itself better to him playing the role than the age he was when he was in Buffy. It just, he's got more of a dominance in his face and more character, and which is something that, you know, I was mentioning that I wanted somebody older as a bit of a change of pace, and he has it. But yeah, he really sold me with that one.
He was good in Robin Hood, not Robin Hood, Big Fan. He was good in Merlin as well.
Yes, I hear that. I hear a lot of people really like him in that. I have not watched that though.
And I think he's one of those actors who seems to have got better as he's got older. Or he sort of found something as he's got older that he didn't have when he was younger. I know that sounds silly, but you know what I mean. It's there's something that's come with the experience of acting to that particular age that he's found like other characters, or he's been cast as other characters because he's not that like smooth man next door that he used to be.
Yeah, well, you know, most actors mature over time.
I think all of them
with the more experience. But but the point is that sometimes too, it's also in the beginning they're getting jobs that they can to pay their bills, and now he may be getting jobs that actually suit his ability.
Sure.
You know, so it could certainly be that, because I'll tell you, like, Buffy definitely to me seemed like a job to pay the bills. You know, and while it was a hugely popular show and you stay with it because it's giving you a name and it's giving you success and it's giving you, you know, the ability to pay your bills, it really seemed like that to me. I never could get into it. It just never seemed like anything special to me, and I was surprised that it lasted as long as it did.
I'm shocked. I'm shocked, since it was pretty much a heavy precursor for much of what we have in Doctor Who today.
So you know, they say that. Even Russell says that, but I don't see it. Because I'll tell you what, while I did not like Buffy, I have seen every single episode. And the reason I have seen every single episode is because one of my exes was so heavily into
it. I knew it.
She watched Doctor Who, I watched Buffy. Now, but here's the thing. Since I've seen everyone, I have that comparison to the new series of Doctor Who. It's not there. I don't see what people are seeing because it's just not there.
Well, maybe you would if you saw more of the British output. Maybe because of the British output, it stands out in the way it's constructed and in a lot of the way the dialogue's implemented, particularly Torchwood, obviously. There seemed to be heavy strands which came across from Buffy and Angel, particularly because we don't have that in anything else in our shows. Maybe that's why, from a British perspective, it perhaps seems more apparent than it might do from an American perspective.
I think it's more to do with... I don't really think it is... I think the influence comes through the writers,
yes,
as opposed to how it's affected the actual show. I think a lot of writers were influenced by the way that the stories were constructed and the way that dialogue was handled. And so a more realistic attitude to dialogue, which previously, you know, exposition is done in a far more detailed and casual way than it would have done previously in, you know.
Yeah, but that's TV in general, though. Evolved in general.
Well, in the US, perhaps. But in the UK, this was a revolutionary approach.
Yeah, but then I wouldn't credit that to Buffy, though. I would credit that to American TV, if you're going to do anything.
Buffy had that passage through that a lot of shows didn't, you know, like Star Trek or... Buffy came out of a period where there wasn't an awful lot of British TV, American TV in Britain. There was perhaps a bit of Star Trek. There was your Lois and Clark, which we call The New Adventures of Superman, and a handful of other things, and the rest of it was all, you know, reruns of Dallas Dynasty and stuff.
I don't think there's any argument. I mean, we don't want to spend too much time on
Buffy.
No. But Buffy did, in a lot of way, bring a transitional approach to how even American markets dealt with a young fantasy.
There's lots of different fronts how it changed things, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and I still think it's a remarkably clever show. I don't think it's dated well. I still think at the time, I remember watching at the time and thinking, this is brilliantly smart. It's the way it handles horror, the way it takes it with a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek, the way the dialogue is not entirely self-referential, but is very smartly worked out, and it surprises you. It does things you don't expect. And consider, I used to watch a lot of American television of that sort of ilk. Nothing like that compared. And I can see facets of that, not just in Doctor Who. You could see it milk out into obvious comparisons like Charmed, but you could see it going out into other shows as well. There became a way, it felt for the first time in America and started in Britain as well, the geeks and the nerds were writing for themselves. And that sort of feeling of understanding the techniques of writing and understanding the issues and the themes of science fiction, horror and fantasy as fans was being put into a show. And I think obviously because Doctor Who, in a certain respect, their writers reflect that same sort of ideology, I do think this that you could they would look, certainly Russell T. Davis, I'm sure he said he has as well, looked at Buffy as a very strong template to how Doctor Who could work to a modern day audience.
Yeah, yeah.
By giving it that sort of horror edge that Buffy kept with, but keeping it light enough and the Doctor light enough that it didn't go down a passageway which was alien to what Doctor Who's about or would alienate audiences. Torchwood, I think, you get to Torchwood Series 2, I think virtually every episode seems to have been done by Buffy or Angel. It's quite shocking, really. Mm. You think, even having James Masters playing almost an identical character. But with going back to Tony Head, I do think he probably got something out of Buffy because I still think at the time, the material as an actor, I mean, he's quite a London guy. If you hear him speak, as you know, he's not the archetype, as you say, that he's sure. The American archetype he portrays, Brian, you're right. And I think it did give him something to work with because he wasn't playing his own, he wasn't playing himself, and the dialogue was witty and interesting enough, I think, to make it an interesting role. I thought Giles was a very interesting role. But if he was to do Doctor Who, I would like him to do it in a little more of the Cockney, London side of Anthony Head, not to do a, you know, as you say, Brian, an American archetype of what the Doctor might be if someone wrote it. I agree with you there. I think that would be a mistake.
Although, of course, it would be interesting to have a last Time Lord who's perhaps, we don't know, obviously, perhaps in his last incarnation, wondering what's going to come after him in a kind of echoing how he played Uther Pendragon, perhaps.
He could actually go up to people and say, "Hello, would you like a coffee bean?" He's one side, it could be his little thing, the coffee bean.
Indeed. Okay, let's go back to Peter Capaldi.
Oh, yeah, him.
That guy.
Yeah, that guy who's the 12th Doctor. Because, you know, we've got lots of things to watch between now. And you could look at this, dear listener, as an extended recommendation section. We'll do our own other recommendations later on. But you could look at this as an extended recommendation section of things to watch over the next 12 months to really get to know. Off the next 3 months, depending on how you want to look at it, really get to know Peter Capaldi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's been in Doctor Who before as Caecilius in The Fires of Pompeii, which I've taken the time to rewatch this week.
Yeah.
And do you know, I was discovering things I'd completely forgot in The Fires of Pompeii. It's a very good episode, but for me, it was always the sage off always stood out for me. That's all I can ever remember about it. In his house when the Doctor is and Donna are sort of thrown by the predictions of Caecilius' daughter and Phil Davis' character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something on your back. Even his name is hidden, etc. All that sort of stuff. So that's always stuff that stood out for me, and it's a very good episode. I'd completely forgotten how they escaped from the volcano, for instance. So, if you haven't watched that recently, listener, that's from 2008, stars David Tennant and Catherine Tate, watch it. And, you know, over the years, Peter Capaldi, he's been on TV and in films, going back to 1982. 1983, he's in Local Hero as a character called Olsen, who, you know, you'd notice him, but he's not... Key character, I think it's fair to say. He's in The Lair of the White Worm as well, which is a god-awful movie, but is watchable for all the wrong reasons. Have any of you guys seen The Lair of the White Worm?
Have not, no.
No?
This is an old, from 1988, it's an old Ken Russell movie, which stars Amanda Donahoe and Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant looks very young, Amanda Donahoe looks very young, and... It's from the Bram Stoker novel. I'm not entirely sure how close it is to the original. I didn't know Capaldi was in it until I noticed it in the IMDb list. It's you wouldn't forget it after you've seen it. It's in the tradition of the cover of the DVD or the cinematic poster is kind of in the tradition of the old Hammer movies, and I think they were kind of getting towards doing it being a Hammer-esque thing, but it's quite awful in places, to be honest with you. Let's be frank, it's quite awful in places. And apparently Peter Capaldi's in that as a character called Angus Flint. I really don't remember that at all. Although I do remember it did have a really good cast at the time when I watched it. So, and Christopher Gable's in it as well. Shara's Jack.
Isn't it nice?
Yes. So Capaldi's done loads of TV. Now, I noticed the other day he was in the Alexi Sayles show.
Was he?
He was, yeah. Alexi Sayles did this running gag through the 94-95 series. Remember Lost in Time, the old US TV series from the 60s?
Yes.
Where two guys get lost in time, hence the title. They did this character, this sketch called Drunk in Time, in which Alexi Sayles' character and Peter Capaldi's character accidentally fell into a time machine and get thrown through time, basically.
Wait, sorry, Lost in Time?
Yeah, Lost in Time. What was it called? Wasn't it? Oh, no, Time Tunnel.
Okay, I was going to say that. I wanted to know if maybe they just changed the name for you guys over there, because I know that happens, but I just had to question that. Okay,
no,
Time Tunnel.
Don't
yeah,
worry, you've embarrassed Christian instead, which is far more delicious.
Why would I be embarrassed? What a show.
Lost in Time.
I enjoyed that show. I just rewatched the entire thing, like, maybe a year ago.
Really?
Yeah. It's a fun little show. It's not fantastic. It's not like a masterpiece, but it was a fun little show. Really? It was the weirdest thing though, because like they kind of did an episode or so out of order. But however they ended the show, they had I think the last episode was like an episode that they filmed first or something, or it looked that way. It was really a weird thing, but it was a fun show. I don't know. I liked it. But yeah, go on.
Okay. Yeah, and it was alright. It was no different to any of the other shows from Lost in Space, perhaps. Or Space Tunnel, as I might call it.
I was going to say.
Now, of course,
Space Tunnel.
Although most famous, perhaps in the UK, among certain people, because I discovered in a conversation this week that not many people actually watch the extremely amusing and at times laugh out loud funny fly on the wall style mockumentary. Thick of it, and not many people seen In the Loop either, even though Capaldi's possibly best known as playing Malcolm Tucker. He played a similar character, John Frobisher, in Torchwood, Children of Earth, back in 2009. So I think that should definitely be going on our Peter Capaldi recommendations list.
There's some lovely clips of him in the thick of it on YouTube.
Yes.
Which I must admit I was going through after on the Sunday night.
How many times did you laugh out loud?
I actually wasn't laughing out loud. I was really impressed with the acting. I know that sounds very toffee, but it was the scene. I think we talked about this before, didn't we, Christian? It was the scenes at the inquiry, mm-hmm. where he's giving evidence about leaks.
Yeah.
And it's very well written, but his acting is so deft, down to every little nuance, that if you want to see Capaldi at his best, I would recommend you buy, obviously, rather than just watch little snippets, but you perhaps even purchase a season of
Thick of It,
because he is fantastic in it. He's an outlandish character, but he plays it with utter conviction, which is obviously what you need to do with the Doctor, is to marry those two aspects. So, yeah, definitely The Thick of It would be my recommendation.
Okay. And just one last thing. He's also in World War Z.
Yes.
Or perhaps some people might call it World War Z. Brian, have you had the... I was going to say fortune. That's completely the wrong word, isn't it? Have you experienced World War Z/Z in any way?
No.
No.
Very bored of zombie flicks.
Yeah.
And, despite the fact that they want to make them be super speed, demons, I guess. I have no clue. It just kind
of,
well, you
know. It's Lord of the Rings, isn't it? It's Helm's Deep just turned up to 11, basically, from the clips I've seen. I don't want to.
This is how it is for me. I watched the trailer. And I said, wow, look at all those bodies. Like, everybody's climbing on each other like a mountain to try and get to this helicopter. That's kind of cool. That's all I really need from that movie. I saw the trailer. That's it. I'm done. You know, like, really, that's there's nowhere else to go. But
well, Capaldi's
in it. No offense to him, yeah. No offense to Capaldi, but yeah, but no, no, I haven't seen it.
Well, we mentioned this last week, but I just want to reiterate this. I want to know what your thoughts of this are, Brian. Do you know what his character's called in World War Z?
Yes, everybody's commenting on this. And
are they?
I find it hilarious that, like, everybody's picking on this, picking up, but anybody could have been called that. That's what they're called, you know?
I know, yeah.
It's not the first time that anybody's been listed with just those initials.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I know.
That's
but
how
I
mean, it is.
But is it slightly strange, as if it was maybe...
Known?
Known, yeah.
I mean, would you have listed him as I don't know, doctor, just a doctor, or Trask?
Well, how big is his role in the film? Is it a large role? Is it a small role? Because generally when they're
There are several
they don't
of him.
Names.
There are other actors playing Who Doctors.
Okay, so the other people are listed with that same title?
Yeah.
But
well,
still...
Then it can't have been known if other people in the film are also listed with the same title. If he was the only one, then maybe I would sit there and speculate with you. But if other people are listed with that same title as well, then no.
Perhaps it is purely an amazing case of synchronicity.
Yeah, I mean, unless the DVD of that film comes out and nobody buys it because nobody saw it, but one Doctor Who fan may stumble upon it, like Ian Levine or somebody, and find this one little hidden Easter egg where the director says, hey, Stephen Moffat told me that Peter got cast as Doctor Who, so I thought it would be funny if we listed about 15 different people as the Who Doctor, and maybe Doctor Who fans would see it and go, hey, Peter Capaldi is listed as the Who Doctor. He's probably him. I'm just going to say it's an amazing quiz.
Fair enough. We have a term for you. We call it sourpuss.
Probably so. Because you know what? With technology now, it's, you know, you're on Twitter, you're on Facebook, you have your email, people have your text on your phone, and you know, your Tumblr, which I'm not on, thankfully, and DeviantArt, whatever. And it's cool. I'm not complaining. It's cool. I like the interaction. I like that people think of me. I think that's really nice. So I'm not complaining about anybody. But there are certain things that when you see it enough times, you're just like, oh, my God. Like, I've responded to this, like, 15 times already. Like, doesn't anybody read the other 15 times? And not talking about here, because that you're bringing it up for legitimate purposes here, that we should bring it up because it is a funny little thing that, to talk about. But there are just certain things. You know, I'm tired. I'm extremely tired of... I feel like James this week. I'm sorry to say that, man. But, you know. Anyway, I'm extremely tired of internet memes. I just think they're the most boring thing right now. And I, you know, whenever there's a new one, like that grumpy cat, please go away. I was tired of that after the first photo somebody posted up. I'm just tired of those things. It just doesn't seem like they're interesting or entertaining anymore. The Who Doctor thing, it's funny. It's a funny little thing to see, but, you know, it's just...
Sorry, I will never get bored of memes of that shot of Batman smacking, backhanding Robin. I just don't think I'll ever get over it.
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, I don't think I'll ever get sick of the one of Paul McGann hitting Stephen Moffat.
Yeah, but... no, I won't get back to that. And you know that they're generally all different, all the ones that use the 60s Spider-Man cartoon. I love those. They're funny.
Yeah.
But when people do them cleverly, some people do them just asinine, and I think that's kind of rude. Like, you know.
Yeah. But okay, well, just one last word on World War Z. It's got nothing to do with Doctor Who. The director, Matt Forster, is also the guy who directed Quantum of Solace. So if you think we've been unfair about a film that we haven't seen, we've all seen Quantum of Solace.
I haven't.
You haven't?
No.
Lucky man.
I'm not being difficult either. I genuinely haven't.
No, it's fine. You don't... break your neck to see it. Just wait till, you know, you sum up on it on ITV3 one day or something like that.
I'm sure that will be soon.
Probably, yes. Okay, so let's bring things into full recommendations territory now, because as we all know, Peter Capaldi is the 12th Doctor.
Is he?
He is.
You're getting a bit bored of that.
No. No. Recommendations time.
Go on, man.
So, James, do you want to go first? Normally, I ask Brian, and he's all like...
And he gets grumpy.
And then we get accused of not being organized.
I actually have recommendations, Sam. Sort of, kind of, but I have them. They're here, but James can go first.
Okay.
It's cool. It's your week, man. Enjoy.
Well, my recommendation is probably... could be a short one, depending on sales, but I noticed this week Reign of Terror on Amazon UK was down to £8.
Oh, right.
Which, from 14 about a month ago.
Yes.
It's quite a sizable difference. So I purchased that. I will recommend, however, you do not order a webcam at the same time, because my box has become slightly impacted by the weight of a webcam box.
Oh, no.
Which is a bit disappointing, but I'm sure the DVD inside is fine. I've not watched it yet, but I think
DVDs,
any...
Because thanks to the impact of the webcam, it's now been split up into several pieces.
Yes, I haven't thought of that. I've not dared to look inside. But I think especially any of the Doctor Who ones where there has been a lot of attention to, so for instance where we've got ones like that where there's animated episodes, they're always worth in supporting with a bit of investment. So Reign of Terror is going quite cheap, I think, given it's a fairly new one and it's a special one on Amazon at the moment, if that bargain is still available. So that'd be my recommendation.
Brian?
I have a recommendation and I have a teaser recommendation because...
Oh, you tease.
Yeah, I am, and I'll explain why. But mine is just a, you know, another old-fashioned kind of Tenant episode, but it's for an interesting reason. I on the flight that I just took recently, I watched Utopia.
Yeah.
And it's a great episode, as we all know. We've always talked about that one. And Derek Jacobi is fantastic. And while I did enjoy Sim as the Master, I am now really feeling the burn that we did not get to see Jacobi longer in the role. Mm-hmm. But the reason I'm recommending it is because I realize watching it this time, which is like the umpteenth time, how interesting it is and how telling it is about the nature of the Master, and that, you know, maybe his insanity is not so much what drove him to be the evil guy that he is, but more so it's just a basic choice. It's a choice that he just wanted power. And the reason I say that is because both the Doctor and the Master used the Chameleon Arch to become human. When they both became human, they both became really nice, helpful men. And that's interesting. The Master, if he was just this insane, maddening, power-hungry man and used the Chameleon Arch, and I understand it tries to hide you and disguise you, but you think that he may have just become some kind of low-life thug or something on human, however it was. And I just found it very interesting that it shows that this man, who was once a friend of the Doctor, it shows where that kind of comes from, you know, that it was there, it's in him, that he at one point was a nice guy, or at least had that capability. And I found that so interesting watching it, and watching the switch change when Derek Jacobi turned into the Master, that performance that he playing both of those characters, and much like, you know, David Tennant's performance before, it was just incredible.
Well,
so
I like
that's
the way
why I would recommend that.
I like the way that they keep coming back to this fact that they were once friends.
Yes.
Not only the fact that they don't just recall it, they, you know, we know that they were friends, first of all, and then something happened and they weren't friends. But you always get that mutual respect between the third Doctor and the Master.
Yeah.
And then you get the Doctor and Treemas. So the Doctor's friends with Treemas. And then Treemas obviously gets taken over by the Master. So then the Master isn't Treemas, obviously, but he has the appearance of Treemas. The Doctor's looking at this guy who used to be his friend. And then this other way of doing it in Utopia, where the Doctor gets on with this guy and helping him out, and a mutual respect between the two, and it turns out it's the Master.
Very good observation. I like that a lot. That's interesting.
So what's your other recommendation?
This is my teaser one. Since I've been away, when I got back, the first thing I checked in the mail was I got my Blu-ray copy of Spearhead from Space.
Oh!
I have not yet had the time to sit down to do it. It's what I'm going to do today. Unfortunately, it's
not
before the podcast.
Shall we talk about that next week?
Yes,
I haven't watched it properly myself yet, and I need to.
Yeah. Well, okay. Cool. Then we can. Yeah. Oh, topic wise, I like that. Yes,
okay,
I like
cool.
that.
Okay.
Your recommendations?
Mine. Do you know? I've kind of already mentioned watching the Fires of Pompeii, so I'll put that aside for a moment. I do recommend that on Court Britannia recently, we reported that there's been a bit of action in the direction of doing a remount or a recreation or a reboot of Blake 7.
Yeah.
And which is very interesting. And I just today happened, sadly, I couldn't buy them. This is basically, I've been to Whitby Regatta today, and there was there's a Siemens mission there. Which also doubles up as a Methodist church, and they had, you know, the sale on in there of things that people were selling to get rid of, you know, flea sales, etc. And every single episode of Blake 7 on DVD from the 2004 series releases were there. And basically, if the person had been there to sell them to me, I would have bought them.
Oh, he must be kicking himself, the listener.
Yeah,
now hearing this.
I should think so. I should think so.
Opportunity.
Opportunity lost there to earn, like, I don't even know how much it was because they weren't priced.
Oh.
It could have been like 60 quid or anything for that charity.
What a fool.
What a fool, indeed. So, I mean, it just so happens I already have them on VHS anyway, but this is, you know, by the by. Bike 7 is a superb series, and, you know, production-wise, it is very, production standards-wise, very similar to Doctor Who of the same era. So don't expect any modern production values, but do expect good storylines. Terry Nation, Chris Boucher, lots of other names familiar with Doctor Who.
Dudley Simpson,
exactly, yeah. The list is massive list. We can't go through it now, but not without doing another podcast, basically.
No.
So that is my recommendation today, but basically just because I saw it, and there might be some more Blake 7 coming along, and it is very close to Doctor Who. So that's really my main recommendation. Watch some Blake 7. Fascinating series. James.
Yeah.
Did you do your recommendation?
I did. It was Reign of Terror, wasn't it?
It was Reign of Terror, of course.
Glad you were listening.
Yes, I was listening.
Oh, is it my turn to do a recommendation?
So what was yours, Brian? Okay, so dear listener.
It was Don't Watch World War Z.
Ouch.
Oh, go see it if you want to see it. No, that's, you know, I know we're leaving, but that's my one thing. Don't listen to me. If you want to see World War Z, go see World War Z. If you read a review that I write on the K about something and I'm not complimentary, which is not usually the way it is because I generally am because I roll and write about the ones that I like.
You absolutely slated.
Yes, but hey, the thing is, what I'm saying is I actually don't like critics. I don't like reviewers. The reason I don't like them is because I've known too many people who have said, I want to go see this thing. It looks good. But then the critic goes, hey, this thing is crap. Don't go see that. Essentially, I paraphrase. But then I say to my friend, let's go. And they go, nah, you know what? It's getting bad reviews. The critics don't like it. Well, you know what? Lots of things that I love get bad reviews. But I love them because I saw them and I made up my own damn mind. So basically,
you can
go do that. It's amazing, but it happens, right? Like internet memes. Yes. I have no interest in seeing World War Z, so I am being unfairly unjust to it because I don't know what it's like. I don't know if it's a good movie. It's just not something that speaks to my interest, so it is amazing
how it does change things, though, because, I mean, I remember reading Shatner's autobiography, or semi-autobiography. I think he had a helping hand with someone with a crayon to give out. It was a good autobiography, actually, so I'm not knocking crayon writing.
Well, you know, I do actually have another recommendation.
Well, let me finish this.
Spinning us off into a completely mental direction.
I was just going to say, William Shatner was pointing out that Star Trek V, when it came out, actually had reasonable reviews, and it was doing well until the bad reviews came in, and then the box office hit. Now, I'm not saying it's a brilliant film, but it is. The point is that people's opinions will
sway. Yeah.
Just the one where they went to find God.
Yeah.
I
do like that one. Out of all of them, no, it's not the best one. But I feel that the reviews on it are
very
good.
I think so. People say it's the worst movie ever. I think you've not seen many movies.
You haven't seen The Lair of the White Worm, for starters.
There you go. Right. What was your other recommendation?
Okay, well, my other recommendation has got Doctor Who link.
There you go.
Namely, John Wagner.
Okay.
Because I watched Dread the other evening.
Good.
I've had it on DVD for a few weeks. I didn't mean to go to the cinema to see it, but, you know, I haven't. Twins sometimes stops you from going to the cinema. And what a fantastic film.
It is, isn't it?
Yes.
And that's a perfect example to bring up.
Say that again, Brian?
I say that's a perfect example to bring up for exactly what we're talking about, because it didn't do well in the box office because people were expecting it to be like the Sylvester Stallone film.
Yeah, which was silly of them.
Right. So rather than see it and see that it was such a good film and that it warrants sequels and so on, most people just didn't bother because they expected the bad reviews that the other one had or the bad connotations that the other one brought on, unfortunately. So that's a very good one. Glad to hear you say that one.
Yeah. And just to clarify for our listener who may be younger, John Wagner, who created Just Dread, also wrote several ideas to the BBC for Doctor Who in the 1970s and later went on to write for Doctor Who magazine. With serials such as Doctor Doom, Iron Legion, Star Beast, etc.
So yes, it's a good thing, and I think it's a good point as well because I mean, Dread is where superhero films need to go if they've got any sense. They'll be watching that and emulating that, and I don't think they will. And I think by 2015, we're going to have the most terrible cinematic pileup of of disappointment and things are going to go massively wrong for Hollywood. It's just, that is the perfect superhero film, isn't it? Get rid of the origins, mm-hmm. no origins, get straight into the middle of the action, yeah. no ridiculous explosive ending. Stephen Moffat, Russell T. Davis, take heed as well.
Yeah.
Don't need to blow up a world to have an exciting ending.
Yes, yes.
It's just absolutely. Got everything that it's where you know, I would say honestly Doctor Who could watch it as well and learn probably as well. I think it's just the right way to be doing fantasy at the moment, and I hope people do start going down that route.
Well, it looks like they'll probably get a sequel as well.
It's looking that way. I mean, my Facebook
more positive, yeah.
It's bloody well Doctor Who, Judge Dredd sequel, Dredd sequel. Signed a few groups to that, and it seems to be every other post seems to be about Dredd.
Yeah.
It's getting a massive interest, good. So yeah, good.
Good, clever film, well directed as well. Okay, so that is the end of our largely talking about Peter Capaldi, but also talking about other things. Gasterbridge Podcast with a K.
Wait, I'm sorry, Stitcher app?
Sorry?
Stitcher app? What's that? What was about? What about
Stitcher app?
Yeah, I don't know. What's
the Stitcher
you were saying?
App. Yes. Did we not do Stitcher?
Stitching time!
Yeah, I don't... I just, you know...
Yeah,
just,
obviously,
just
felt, dear listener, if you are still listening and I haven't stitched this bit onto the beginning of the podcast, you can listen to Castellaverse Podcast with a K using different methods. We are available through iTunes, through the RSS feed on Castellaverse. You can listen to us on the little player on Castellaverse. You can listen to us on Audio Boo. And we're also available on the Stitcher app, which will stream Castellaverse Podcast to you on your phone or your car or your smart TV.
Why did the chicken cross the road?
Because it was there.
Stitcher app. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Stitcher app.
This is brilliant.
I know. I could go on.
Go on,
don't
then.
Don't use these now, though. Tack these on at the end of every podcast. Come on,
do them. Okay.
What's the difference between an Englishman, an Irishman, and a Scottishman?
I don't know.
Stitcher app.
Until next time, dear listener, goodbye. What do you call a man with a spade in his head?
I'm going to hazard a guess it might be Stitcher app.
Oh, you've heard it.